You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, you are back after a five-day hiatus. You have to feel, super re-energized. You have to feel as if you're ready to just get subbed back into the starting lineup with no concern for how that might throw off the rest of the rotation whatsoever, despite how your replacements might have been playing in your absence, and all those good things. How are you feeling?
I'm starting to feel like this is less about me.
What would give you that sense?
Especially, well, I guess working at a student paper is almost the writing equivalent of being injured. So, yeah, I'll take it. I feel like I mentally broke my hand.
Yeah, you wanted to break your hands.
On a wall. Sometimes.
Definitely not a fellow writer.
Never. I would never even hint at that.
You would never send me a text about your desire to do that kind of thing. Ever.
Never. Not in a million years. Not that anyone can prove.
I took screenshots. All right, so the Lakers lose a tough game and a frustrating game because I tweeted out before the Lakers played the Clippers last night that I thought that the Lakers should probably walk away with a win. The Clippers were playing without Patrick Beverley. They were still without Danilo Gallinari. They still didn't have Milos Teodosic. And you kind of thought to yourself, hey, the Lakers probably have the better team on paper here. And for portions of the game, it really felt that way. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk, of course, about Larry Nance Jr. being reinserted into the starting lineup. As you could tell from the opening of the show, I have my thoughts on that. We're going to talk about Luke in a larger picture conversation. And then because we had a fellow Locked On team host kind of sort of predict what was going to happen.
Kind of called a shot.
Yeah, kind of nailed it. We're going to play a clip of that audio and then give our thoughts on how the Lakers could take advantage of that on the C block. So, as always, make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Harrison, you weren't able to tune into the game too much, but what were your thoughts on Luke inserting Larry Nance Jr. straight into the starting lineup?
Well, so my thought on this was, it was after Lakers practice. I thought about this quite a bit on Saturday, or it was over the weekend, because, actually it was Friday, but Luke basically kind of unexpectedly, I think, said that Nance was going to be back in the starting lineup and that was his expectation when he came back. And I think that was a surprise to a lot of people because of how well Kuzma has been playing. And
he averaged over 18 points in as a starter.
Yeah. And so I think that was I think it's fair to say that was a little bit of a surprise to assume that Nance was going to come back in and take that spot right away, even sports cliches being what they are about players not losing their starting spot due to injury and all that, you know, good stuff. But, I don't get upset about things. I didn't think it was as completely not understandable of a move as a lot of people seem to think. I thought there were reasons for Luke's decision. I didn't necessarily, it wouldn't be the decision I would make, but I could see what he was going for. And I think a big part of that was just that the Nance Randall front court just has not usually worked. And
it
so
did not
I thought
once again
might,
tonight.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And so I thought, like, okay, he's trying to avoid having that pairing together. This kind of makes sense. I can, like, you know, if you squint, you can see some logic here. And then tonight, of course, that exact front court that I said he was trying to start Nance to avoid at all costs is the one that he closed with. Despite the fact that neither of those two guys played, I didn't think, like, incredibly well down the stretch. At least not. I mean, Kuzma should have been in there. Is kind of,
yeah,
I think, takeaway. And
especially, you know, once Griffin went down, especially once Griffin was out of the game, and you didn't, you know, Nance, to Nance's credit, I thought he challenged Griffin all over the court, didn't give him an inch basically anywhere. And Luke talked about that after the game, that he was impressed by that. And Nance deserves credit for it. But once Griffin was out of the game and it was pretty obvious that the Lakers were struggling to get anything going off offensively, hey, guess who you have sitting on your bench right over there? Instant offense. And somebody who helps everybody on the court, because the opposing team has to pay attention to where he is at all times. I agree with the overall point that you're making, though, about why it made some sense that Nance should start. And it's just a mathematical issue. Basically, based on the numbers that we have so far, and those numbers can change, we're only a month into the season, but based on the numbers that we have so far, there are certain guys out there who have not played very well together. And the thinking was, you insert Nance back into that starting lineup. He's a starter only nominally, only in the name of the role. And the bulk of the minutes are still going to go to Kyle Kuzma and Julius Randle, who, in my opinion, are both better players than Larry Nance Jr. at this stage in their careers.
I don't feel like that's that much of a stretch.
I don't think so. And so you kind of thought, and the one thing I tweeted out was, then one nice thing about Nance being inserted into the starting lineup is that we don't have to watch Andrew Bogut play anymore, and we don't have to watch Corey Brewer play anymore. Unfortunately, that did not play out that way last night against the Clippers, and it just showed that the team lacks offense drastically when Nance is out there and Brook Lopez isn't shooting the ball very well. I think it took the Lakers.
He did not do that tonight.
It took the Lakers, I believe, 5 minutes to score their sixth point in the first quarter, and that's just, you just can't do that. And I'm not, again,
scoring points, I'm told, is good.
Based on Magic's tweets, I think that analysis is spot on.
That was a Magic tweet.
So I you know, we'll see how this continues to play out. I think it was kind of weird judging the rotation solely off of this one game by itself, not just because of the typical, you know, you don't want to analyze off of one game sample sizes. But you had Ingram in foul trouble. You had Lopez in foul trouble. I believe you had Randle in some foul trouble for stretches of the game. It was just the refs were pretty whistle happy, and I think that kind of messed with some of the minutes. And because of that, I'm not willing to put this game solely on Luke. But as we're going to talk about here in a second, I do think he deserves some criticism without jumping off into the far end of the spectrum and saying that he should be fired. Nor do I think he is completely above criticism. So let's have that conversation here in a bit. So Harrison, how long until we get to start the hashtag Fire Luke season going?
I think it's still going to be a little while, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have stronger thoughts on Luke than I do. Mm-hmm. But I thought the point that you made about the conversation earlier tonight, when we were talking about before the show, about the conversation becoming so polarized, is an interesting one. And I think, I see the same thing on Twitter. There are people saying basically fire Luke, or basically he's an idiot. Basically, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And then there are people that are saying, oh, that's crazy. You can't criticize him yet. There are bad players on the team, and there's not a roster designed to win, and he's a young coach too, and like da da da. And like, I think all of this, the conversation has obviously become very polarized, and it's that's interesting to me. But I think, like, realistically, Luke is not going to be fired.
No.
And so I think all of this is a moot point. Lakers love Luke, and he is a young coach. And so it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what any of you listening think, unless you're in the Lakers front office, in which case, thanks for listening, Rob and Magic. But unless you're Rob Pelinka or Magic Johnson or Jeannie Buss, then it really doesn't matter what you think. And I think that those three people have given no indication whatsoever that they would be willing to fire Luke. And I think maybe the one thing that is kind of interesting there is that Magic and Pelinka didn't hire Luke. So maybe they would be more willing to let him go than the last regime is, but only by marginal degrees. And they've said nothing but positive things about him since he was hired. And I mean, Jeannie fired her own brother. Jeannie fired her own brother, so we can't like say that she is not going to get rid of family members or whatever. But you got to remember, too, Luke is basically like a son to her.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing, too, is I think Rob and Magic and Jeannie and anybody in that front office recognizes how tough a job it is that Luke has in front of him. That front court, no matter who gets the minutes, unless it's Andrew Bogut, no matter who gets those minutes, somebody deserving is going to be deservedly upset about not getting minutes. And, you know, if it's Randall playing well on a given night and Kuzma plays really well with Randall, then that combination is something you should ride. Or if it's Lopez that has things going, and because Lopez has things going, you can get away with having Nance's lack of offense out there, then fine. You can run with that any given night. And it's impossible, basically, to plan for these kinds of things because of how it's hard for me to call them a deep bench or a deep front court, because I think all of these players have a pretty major flaw in their game right now. So, like, I usually when I think deep, I think of playoff-worthy players who all deserve to get playoff minutes. I wouldn't feel very comfortable if the Lakers were a playoff team and Randall or Kuzma or Nance or Lopez, even for that matter, had to carry the bulk of that responsibility. But with what they have right now, that's a really tough math problem to figure out. And forcing Luke to kind of do that on a game-by-game basis puts a lot in the lap of a second-year head coach. And
especially when you have to manage the locker room dynamic of Andrew Bogut is a guy that he coached in Golden State, a guy that's helping these young guys kind of grow and develop good habits. And you probably have to, like, from a locker room perspective, you probably have to find some minutes for him occasionally. And that doesn't make things easier either.
Yeah, and we'll see how those minutes play out. That's why, you know, it would have been interesting. Do the Lakers play tomorrow?
The Lakers do not play tonight.
So it'll be interesting to see in the practice report. And this is the one thing I would, if I had the opportunity to ask Luke questions, I don't think it serves anybody to ask Luke questions about his rotations right after a game, because it's just way too much to process, and you have the emotions of a game going on. And I thought it was kind of laughable when Luke said after the game that he thought Larry Nance Jr. was the best Laker on the court tonight.
So yeah, I was actually curious for your thoughts on this, because when I was watching, that did not seem to be the case.
Okay.
So I was not as locked in as I like to be tonight, mm-hmm. but yeah, that did not appear to be like jumping off the screen at me. And somewhat hilariously, Larry Nance Jr. had the worst plus minus of any Laker tonight, tied with Brandon Ingram. Plus minus is not perfect, but come on.
Well, what I heard when I heard him say that was basically,
by the way, Randall and Kuzma were plus 11 and plus 12 respectively
in a game that they won by five or lost by five. So, but when he said that struck me as a coach kind of trying to talk them into the decision that they made, talk themselves into a decision that they made, or explain to people a decision that they made.
It almost comes off to me as one of those things like, oh, you guys just don't know basketball as mm-hmm. well as I know it. And I saw all these things besides his scoring and rebounding and all this stuff that Larry Nance Jr. did that helped the team lose by only five.
Right. And
And look, I thought Nance did a lot of the types of things that Nance does on a court. He dove on a couple loose balls, and he played tough defense against.
He was active. He just wasn't the best player on the floor.
Right. Best player on the floor, like KCP dropped, what, 29 points?
29.
Yeah. You have him to look at. I thought Ingram, when he wasn't in foul trouble and was driving to the basket, was pretty obviously the best Laker on the court during those stretches. I thought Kyle Kuzma came in and in his 19 minutes scored, I think, either 15 or 18 points. Jordan Clarkson
15 points had an
efficient game. I think he scored 17 points in fairly limited minutes as well.
You are correct. In 26 minutes, he dropped 17.
Yeah. So and
did not look happy sitting on the bench at the end.
He was livid, and he was right to be. Lonzo had no business being in that game, but. But all these micromanaging things aside, I wanted to get back to the larger point that we were having earlier, and that I think it's perfectly fair to ask whether or not Luke is handling this team as well as he possibly could. And frankly, it would be a little weird if he did. Like what people don't realize, so people look at Pop, they look at Phil Jackson, and they even look at Steve Kerr and these coaches who are at the top of what people think of when they think of good NBA coaches. Before Phil Jackson was running the Bulls and you know, let alone the Lakers, I believe he coached, was it Puerto Rico? Or maybe I have this turned around where...
No, he coached in the CBA. He coached in a bunch of different places as a head coach.
And Popovich, I think, was the one who coached down there in Puerto Rico or something. So one of those two guys coached in Puerto Rico. And we didn't get to see, or nobody remembers those guys developing as head coaches. Popovich, they were ready to fire him in his first year because I believe it was David Roberts.
I believe there was a local paper that wrote that he should be fired.
David Robinson got hurt. He got hurt, and it led to Tim Duncan getting drafted, and the rest has been history. But it took even Greg Popovich time to figure things out. Steve Kerr was fired from his first post when he was GM of the Phoenix Suns. And when he got to Golden State, he got a team, he inherited a team that was ready to take that next step as well. Now, I think he hugely helped, and he did a really good job of organizing a staff, and I think that's where Luke Walton has really fallen the most disappointingly short, is in organizing a staff around him that aren't his frat buddies from the University of Arizona. But what the larger point I'm getting at is it'd be weird if Luke Walton just hit the ground running and was immediately the coach that everybody expects him to be. Just like it would be weird if Lonzo Ball stepped onto the court and was immediately the player that LeVar Ball and Magic Johnson hyped up. That's not how these things work. It takes time. And that doesn't mean that he is above criticism. And that doesn't mean that any criticism of him is fair or unfair given the context. I think he's made a couple boneheaded decisions with some of these rotations, given the construct of the roster that he has and the players that he has to work with. And I think as the season rolls along and maybe as the roster thins itself out, either via personnel movement or injury or what have you, these things will kind of work themselves out. And we just kind of have to be patient for it. But I also don't need to be subtweeted by half of Lakers Twitter anytime I wonder what the hell is going on in Luke Walton's head when he plays Lonzo Ball late in a game that he has no business playing in, and he plays Larry Nance Jr. for offensive possessions and Kuzma for defensive possessions. I thought, you know, I think all of these things can be true, and nuance is difficult and it can be really boring and it causes me to ramble on and on and on and on, but that's kind of how analysis has to go at this point.
Yeah, and you know, I'm actually all for all of Lakers Twitter subtweeting you whenever they want. So that's all I have to add there.
Good point. Good. That's a very valid point. I almost always deserve it. The one good thing that the Lakers have going for them is that they still have an employed head coach. They do not have interim head coach J.B. Bickerstaff, who at this point, like his resume just has to say, I am a professional interim head coach in the NBA. Like we alluded to at the beginning of the show, We have a fellow, the host of Locked On Grizzlies was on with David Locke, who predicted that this kind of thing might be coming. We're going to listen to that audio, and then on the other side of that, we're going to give our thoughts on how the Lakers can possibly benefit from the situation going on out there in Memphis.
Could this be the beginning of a road that leads to a Gasol trade and starts a full-out rebuild for the Memphis Grizzlies?
I always kind of thought after last year that it would be either Mark or Fizdale. You know, an 8-game losing streak could balloon to like something crazy if they don't get this fixed ASAP. And very few coaches can survive when things aren't going well and you reel off a double-digit losing streak. So it may lead to a Gasol trade. It may lead to Fizdale being fired. I think it's a coin flip at this point, which one of those is more likely.
I would say the most obvious way in which the Lakers can benefit from what went on there between Mark Gasol and David Fizdale and the...
Trading for Mark Gasol.
The organizational mess.
There's a dissatisfied Gasol brother in Memphis. He's ready to come save the Lakers and lead them to two titles.
So what you're saying is the Lakers have to sign Kwame Brown and send him to Memphis.
Again, yeah.
Resign
Kwame Brown.
but a lot of the conversation after Fizdale was let go was, all right, what's next for him? Where might he land? What might his options be? And obviously the Lakers could use, in my opinion, a little less insular thinking. They had some great assistance with Quinn Snyder, Ettore Messina there for a bit. There's Steve Clifford has turned out to be a pretty good head coach. And for me, I subscribe to the idea that you put enough brilliant minds or good or great minds in the room at the same time and something good is going to come out from it. I just don't know if David Fizdale is going to want to immediately jump onto an NBA bench after what sounds like a pretty ugly situation out there in Memphis.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I almost think that this is the type of thing that's going to increase his stock, because we saw it happen. We saw it happen with Mike Malone in Sacramento, where mm-hmm. he got fired and he immediately was an attractive head coaching candidate because people were like, that's kind of BS that he got fired. Mm-hmm. And so I think that
we
Dave might
Yeager
see
out
like
of the
that.
Same situation in Memphis took Michael Malone's job after that.
Yeah. And so I think that it's almost one of those things where his stock's almost going to rise because people are going to be like, whoa, what are they? The Grizzlies don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Let's snap this guy up. And so there's a chance that he gets a job like that. I also think that it's probably unlikely that he's willing to jump right back into being a lead assistant. But if he is, then the Lakers would seemingly certainly benefit from, I think, inarguably one of the top lead assistants in the NBA over the last couple of years before he got his head coaching job. And rather than, the guy who's most famous for wrapping scouting reports and not understanding what a hot mic was.
Yeah.
And then trashing a former player on national TV accidentally.
My one thing here with Fizdale is that, look, I don't think it's any coincidence that LeBron was tweeting about it right after Fizdale was let go. He called him his man, and he basically implied that Fizdale was a scapegoat for some weirdness going on out there in Memphis. And
look, fine, time to bring him in as a lead LeBron recruiter.
Well, couldn't hurt. It's just the way I put it when I initially tweeted about it was, it's just another chip that you can put on the table with LeBron and say, hey, look, that we added a little bit more familiarity to the organization that you seem to enjoy.
Got Lonzo
out there in Miami.
And Fizdale and KCP's has the same agent as you. Who gonna stop that?
We're gonna take on the Warriors, baby. Just realizing how sad this sales pitch might possibly be.
Yeah.
But from LeBron's that,
like, oh, did you guys get Paul George? No, we got better. DeMarcus Cousins? No. Dave Fizdale. And then Fizdale just like runs out of a closet as like music's bumping.
Yep.
Take like, that for data.
Yeah, he just rips off those warm up pants and is wearing a Lakers jersey for some reason and just yells, "Take that for data."
If I was Fizdale, I would wear a "Take that for data" shirt at all times.
Yeah,
it's just such a great saying. But
I'd get a custom shirt made that has the rest of his guaranteed money from Memphis on it, and then just below it says "Take that for data."
Yeah, exactly. That's some nice data. Like, he has a lot of data coming to him.
Yeah, I'm into that data.
There's nothing much else to add here regarding that situation. Like, the Lakers aren't going to trade for Marc Gasol. They aren't going to trade for Mike Conley, and that what could be a really ugly contract moving forward. Chandler Parsons is not something that the Lakers want to touch. Basically, the only way the Lakers could potentially benefit from this is if they're able to convince Fizdale to, A, jump right back onto an NBA bench, and also, B, fit in with the existing staff that's already there, right? Because just like there's chemistry on a basketball court, there's chemistry on an NBA bench as well, and you got to make sure that those moods and all of that kind of work well and mesh together. So I wouldn't hold my breath for David Fizdale joining the Lakers staff.
No, I mean, especially because of how long it'll probably be before they would even do that. I would definitely not. I think five out of five doctors would not recommend holding your breath until then.
I always wonder, like, they talk about 9 out of 10 dentists with toothpaste and stuff, right? So, like, I want to know, is that 10th dentist just a huge douche?
That 10th dentist already has a, signing agreement with a different toothpaste company.
That too. One last thing that I wanted to talk about really quickly before we sign off here, and it might come off as a little hot take-ish, but...
Okay.
Given what we've seen from Lonzo, do you think we're reaching a point where playing him in late close games is actually kind of hurting him?
Actually, Anthony, I would argue that no. I'm not gonna do hot take Harrison tonight.
No. I really appreciate you screaming into my ears, though.
You're welcome, and you're welcome to the rest of the audience. No, I don't think so. I think it's good for – I think, honestly, we'd be being inconsistent if we said that it wasn't good for him to get those reps. Like, we were just bashing the last couple of years, the coaches benching young players down the stretch, especially mm-hmm. the last coach before Luke. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be hypocritical to do that and say, oh, yeah, throw D'Angelo Russell out there to get his lumps. But then when Lonzo's taking those lumps, to say, no, actually, take him back out. I think you leave him in. It's the only way he figures it out.
I think I mostly agree, and that consistency is important in the analysis. It's not quite apples to apples, in my opinion, because the Lakers, there's no incentive for them to tank the way there was in previous years. And also, Lonzo is not as far in his development as D'Angelo Russell was. Like, I think Russell was a better rookie, in my opinion, than Lonzo has been. Not by much, but and a lot of it is personal taste. But the reason I'm starting to wonder about this is if you just kind of watch his demeanor on the court, he just looks very lost. He shot 1 of 7 from the field tonight, or last night, and 1 of 6 from three-pointers. So that, to me, tells me when you're not shooting very well and you're just kind of firing away from three-point range, and a few of the shots were just the type of shot you wouldn't expect Lonzo to take because of his basketball IQ, which is something that a lot of people pointed to and continue to point to as a reason why he'll still make it in the NBA. But what I'm starting to get a little concerned with is he starting to formulate bad habits because he's reaching to be a player that he isn't necessarily ready to be right now. And with the Lakers where they are organizationally, not needing to win or not needing to lose games in order to secure any kind of pick. And while Jordan Clarkson continues to play, he's a a better option who is also fairly young, who could also use some of these reps either to raise his trade value or get better as a player himself. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily time to have any,
I think long term
concrete stance, but I do think it's something to keep an eye on in the coming weeks, I would say.
I think long term you're doing more damage to Ball's confidence and value around the league than any added value you get from raising Jordan Clarkson's trade value slightly.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree, and that's the counter. I just wonder if Lonzo is also doing similar damage to his trade value and psyche and all of those things by playing. Because, look, I mean, you can go back and watch the game, and I'm probably going to at some point tonight. He doesn't look comfortable out there. He seems to be floating away from the basketball, and it's kind of a weird thing that somebody who has the confidence that he does and showcases the confidence that he does is kind of faltering on it in ways that I don't want long-term damage to be done. Now, again, this is based off of 1 month into a career that hopefully stretches the next decade plus, and we could look back on this month and say, wow, that was just a blip on the radar. Things started coming around at X date or whatever. But I do think at some point the Lakers kind of have to look at the tape and maybe have a conversation with Lonzo, maybe have a conversation with Clarkson, because Clarkson was livid on the bench, and I thought he deserved to be livid on the bench given how he was playing and how Lonzo was playing in the game. And that substitution that may or may not have led directly to the Clippers getting back into the game and eventually overcoming the Lakers and winning the game, it's a difficult dynamic that the Lakers are going to have to manage very carefully.
Yeah, I agree. It's not an easy choice to make.
Yeah. All right, that does it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Fun one as always. It's a disappointing loss. I hate losing to the Clippers. I hate them. And then,
shouldn't have called your shot, man.
Well, I wasn't really calling a shot. Like I said, I expected the Lakers to win, and I still stand by that analysis. Like
you
the
expected
Lakers,
wrong.
They
Anthony.
Should have. They should have won that game.
You expected wrong.
I did. I'm just glad that Hot Takes Exposed account didn't get a hold of it, despite a ton of people adding them about it. So that was great. Really appreciate snitches. We will be back at it again tomorrow. I believe we'll have a fun topic for tomorrow. We're going to try to think of something a little outside the box. It's a Lakers off day. We like to have fun there. As always, you can find the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. We are going to, again, and by the way, if you won money, at me on Twitter, and I'll DM you either some, okay, Harrison, thank you for that. Harrison just added Old Takes Exposed at my expense, so that was nice of him.
You're welcome.
At me so that I can DM you some way to get you the money I owe you, and at Harrison to figure out a way to get on the show for the whatever 5 minutes that you wanted to roast either Harrison or myself or both of us. We're going to work these things out. We are men of our word.
I just told you that I was already talking to the winner, but that's fine.
Oh, that's my bad. I'm a good listener.
Right. I only talked to you about it this weekend, man.
it was a long weekend, and I lost a few brain cells, if you know what I mean.
We've all been there.